Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations. from the drum Black Eagle off Sound of America Records CD of the 34th Annual Southern California Indian Center Powwow. The song style is women's traditional and is often heard to honor Native women. Great greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we are honored to share a conversation I had with Tsleil-Waututh Cherokee ethnobotanist Mr. David Winston. In the Tsleil-Waututh Cherokee culture, one who is a plant healer or herbalist is greatly respected. They are known as a Cherotaki. David, welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio. I would like to start our conversation with a question about the importance of caring for all of our relations. As we say in my Wabanaki language, Kanon Wantakwasin. In indigenous cultures, one who respects and uses plant medicines for the benefit and well-being of the community understands that this knowledge is a gift from the Creator, Ketantue. One basic tenet of Native life is also to use one's knowledge for caring for and protecting Mother Earth. How do you as a Cherotaki honor this principle to not only care for our people, but also for all life in Mother Earth?
My elders in North Carolina have told me that the original people here, one of their original instructions that Iona Lahi, that which created breath, gave the people was to be a caretaker for the land. And then the white people, the Yonig, they came here and they took the land, but they didn't take away the people's responsibility to be caretakers for the land. Over the years, it's gotten to the point where the traditional people's land has shrunk and shrunk, and so they hold very little of the land in their own hands. But the instructions that they were originally given are still there. And so what my elders have told me is that it is now time for all traditional people who still remember their original instructions of ways to hold the land and to keep it sacred and to respect the plant and the stone and the water and the fire and the cloud and the star nation, all those things. My elders have said it is time for us to take that information and teach the people who now control the land those things. I really agree with that, primarily because if we don't, they're going to destroy it. You know, there won't be any land left, and there won't be any land left for any nation, whether it be in South Dakota or whether it be in Maine or whatever. If acid rain or nuclear bombs or pollution or whatever destroys the land, it's gone. My elder once said to me, the problem with land is they just don't make it anymore. And if we blow it here, we're not going to go to the moon or to Mars or someplace else and live. We've got to make it work here. And so it's really important that people who remember those original instructions pass it down to their children, and that people take a responsibility to pass that information of sacred way of living on to the people who now control the land.
David, throughout our discussion, we've spoken about respecting the spirit world, of trying to live a life in harmony with the creation. A very important part of this life way is being able to get close to one's spirit, as well as close to the spirits that are within every life, all the relations, Kanon Wantakwasin. One of the ways of being in touch with the spirit teachers is through our dreams. In most indigenous cultures, dreams are considered very much part of one's life. My elders taught me to pay attention to and learn from dreams. Unfortunately, many people in the modern world no longer have enough respect for or pay serious attention to their dreams, which have many lessons. In the old days in traditional villages, dreams were very much honored and followed. In fact, part of the work of a plant healer spiritual leader was assisting people dream with the use of certain plant medicines and undertaking certain ceremonies that would promote dreaming. Dreams are a form of spirit prayer. Dreams serve as guides for visioning how one should live life. David, would you please share any thoughts you have about dreaming?
Well, traditionally, and this is also from my limited knowledge of traditional peoples, there's so many traditional peoples in the world, everyone that I've ever learned anything about says, they all say that dreams are incredibly important. The Cherokee believe that dreams are just as real as when you're awake. That time, we believe that whatever you can perceive at any given moment is reality. And so, if you live to be 75 years old, and you spend, say, 8 hours a night sleeping, much of that dreaming, If you don't use your dreams, it means you've wasted 25 years of your life that could be used for growing and for learning about yourself and your spirit and what things you need to know. Dreams are very powerful. Sometimes people say they don't dream. Everybody does. Some people don't remember their dreams. And traditionally, children were trained from a very young age that dreams were important, and it was something to a very important part of your life. I've been told a story that in the old days, what would happen is every morning, usually the grandparents would go to the children and they'd say, "Oh, Tokoja, what did you dream last night?" And the little boy or girl would say, "Oh, I dreamed about a waterfall." And you know, and they'd tell them about their dream and whatever. And so every morning you were encouraged to remember your dreams and to place, you know, significance in those dreams. You know, it wasn't just something that happened. You know, it was an important thing in your life. And maybe some morning you would wake up and your grandpa would come, grandma would come to you and say, "Tokoja, what did you dream about last night?" Little boy or girl would shake their head, scratch their head, and they'd say, "Oh, I don't know, I can't remember." And then everybody in the family would come together and they'd each take a turn trying to guess what that person dreamed. And somebody would say, "Oh, you dreamed about a fish." And they'd go, "No." And go, "Oh, you dreamed about a rock," you know, whatever. You know, maybe nobody would get it. And then they'd all go to the next longhouse. And there, each person there would try to say what that person dreamed about. And sooner or later, somebody would say, "You dreamed about a great white wolf." And little boy or girl would go, yeah, that's it. I dreamed about a wolf." And that was a very special thing because that showed that you and that person had dreamed the same dream. That showed a very special connection. It was a very sacred connection between you and that person that would last for your whole life. Anyway, this taught that dreams were important. You can do this with your children, and if you're an adult, you can try doing that every day. You know, some people find it easier maybe to write them down. Every morning, first thing you do is, as soon as you wake up, you try to write down all the dreams you can remember, even if you only remember a little bit. And over a period of time, you start developing the capacity to remember your dreams, and you start paying attention to them. I sort of think that there's, like, basically maybe four kind of dreams. I mean, there may be more, I don't know, but there's this one kind of dream where it just is sort of all different things. It doesn't seem to make much sense, and a lot of times it just seems to be dealing with some of the things that are left over from the day. We don't attach much significance to those dreams. Then there's the dream that's obviously it's telling you something. You may not understand it, but it's telling you something, and that's important. Then there's the dream where you're dreaming, but you know you're dreaming. It's what's called conscious dreaming. We believe that's very powerful. That's, in fact, one of the intentions of dreaming, is to learn to develop to the point where you can do that at will, where you can conscious dream, where you can work on problems, where you can work on things that in your normal waking consciousness that you maybe can't deal with. In those dreams, if you need to fly, you can fly. If you need to turn yourself into an owl, you can turn yourself into an owl. Whatever it is that you need to do at that time, you can do. You're not constrained by all the limits that is placed on us when we're awake. So it's a very powerful thing to work on dreams. And the fourth kind of dream is a dream where you get a very strong message. It comes very close to what some people would call vision, where you wake up and it's like you weren't dreaming. You know you weren't dreaming. You were being shown something. And those things are the things that you should really hold on to. Many times those are communication from spirit or from ancestors or wherever it comes from. Those dreams are something that's a gift, and they should be recognized as sacred. Many times spirit will come in the form of an animal and teach you something about yourself or give you a name or whatever it is. We use a number of plants for specifically people who have trouble dreaming. People have trouble remembering their dreams. There's plants that can be used either sometimes drunk as a tea, sometimes just burning them. Things like cedar and sage, burning it just before you go to sleep and inhaling some of that helps you to dream. Plant that grows out in the Rocky Mountains called tobacco root or osha root. Drinking a tea of that helps. It's a plant that grows up in Washington State and Oregon that's called lomatium, kushkush. That plant is used for dreaming. In the East Coast here, there's a number of plants. One that grows wild is called mugwort that is used for dreaming. There's another plant called bergamot. Some people also call it Oswego tea and bee balm. And it's very fragrant. Some of it's got red flowers, some of it's got purple flowers, and some of it's got white flowers. There's three different kinds, sort of related to the mint family. And that's a real good one to drink as a tea to stimulate dreaming. So there's many plants that are out there that can help us to stimulate dreaming for those who want to start utilizing their dreams but have trouble remembering them.
Cheyenne musician Joseph Firecrow off his Mekoshe music CD Legend of the Warrior. The name of the song was My Elders Speak. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. My guest today is Tsalgi Cherokee ethnobotanist Mr. David Winston. In the Anikadoa culture, a plant healer such as David is called a Cherotaki. David, my next question focuses on the importance of ceremony. Ceremony is a way of honoring Mother Earth and showing respect for all of our relations. The animals and plant life, the fish and marine beings, the insect and winged life, the soil and rocks, the waters and the air, all of our relatives, which nourish and sustains our life. The gathering and use of plants, either for food or medicine, always require proper respect and permission from the plant relatives. This is done by prayer ceremony. Ceremony is the way in which we care for and protect Mother Earth as well as our community. In our native societies, it is the spiritual leaders, the medicine people, through our clans and prayer societies that help keep our reverence for all life. Those spirit people who work plant medicines to help heal also conduct ceremony to remind us about the sacredness of life and our responsibilities as human beings, not to disrespect or harm other life. Our prayer ceremonies are our offering of appreciation to the Creator. When we walk about on Mother Earth, we should do so with humbleness and gratitude. David, would you please talk about the importance of having respect for ceremony and acknowledging that one's life should be guided by being sincere and serious through spirit prayer? This is what in English is termed ceremony. In my Wabanaki upbringing, we have personal ceremony, which one offers daily, such as at sunrise and sunset. There are also community ceremonies that are performed for each season and for specific purposes, such as planting and harvesting, or for a person's naming, or moose hunt, or being in a fish camp, as examples. Within our tribal nations, there are also formal ceremonies, such as vision quests, or as example, with the Great Plains people, the Sun Dance, or here in Paiogi, the Everglades, Seminole Miccosukee Green Corn Dance, which are annual ceremonies different from routine village life. David, please share your thoughts about ceremony.
Inherently, all people are ritualistic. We need meaningful rituals in our lives to make our lives full. And in many cases, through all people, we live in this world that's increasingly linear thinking. You know, everything is got to make sense, and it's only what our five senses can see and taste and touch and feel, and it doesn't even acknowledge the fact that there's this great mystery out there that is behind everything that happens. It's another reason why we're often empty inside, is because we're trying to examine everything on a linear and rational level, when that's only a little part of what is really there. I think there's all different levels of ceremony, certainly. The personal ceremonies, I think, are things that anybody can do. These are personal ceremonies that you do for yourself, which are different than ceremonies like Inipi ceremony, a sweat lodge ceremony, or Uipi ceremony, or going to water, which is a Cherokee ceremony, a purification ceremony. Those are ceremonies that need to be learned. And it takes, as you're saying, it takes many, many years of training and understanding to learn those ceremonies. And that's not something that can be learned easily, and it's something that requires many years of training and learning, and it's a slow process. Anybody who, I meet people sometimes and they say, oh yeah, I do sweat lodge. And I say, oh, that's interesting. And I say, where did you learn to do that? And they say, oh, well, I took a couple workshops or something like that. And it can't be learned that way. It's something you have to find an elder who is a traditional person, and that person's going to train you, and it's going to take 10 years. It's going to take 15 years. It's not going to happen quickly. It's not going to happen in a month. It's not going to happen in a year. And so those are one kind of ceremony, and I recommend that those people who have those things available, who have elders, go to those elders if you're interested. If you want to look at those things, go and start doing those ceremonies. And if your really spirit draws you, your elder will probably recognize that. Then maybe eventually you train to do the ceremony so that you can do those ceremonies for a young person someday. And then they can learn. These things need to go on. Personal ceremony is something that you can do every day. You don't really need any training. What you need is respect. You need to understand that these are sacred things we're dealing with. Well, actually, everything is a sacred thing. The problem is, in our culture, in the Western culture, they separate everything. You know, you can make a little diagram. The Western culture, you draw a box, and in that box, you divide it into hundreds of little squares. And in one square is music, and one square is religion, and one square, big square, is TV. One square is medicine, doctors. Another square is politics, and another square is, you know, something else. Everything's divided up. It's got its own little place. My elder said to me one time, he was raised by traditionally by his grandpa. He had listened to a radio, and he had heard that white people like to make love at 10 o'clock at night more than any other time. And he told his grandpa that, and his grandpa just shook his head and said, well, that makes sense, because they got a special day just to pray. That's how the dominant culture is. Everything is divided up into its own little box. And if you look at any earth people, indigenous people, and it doesn't matter whether they're from Australia or Africa or Turtle Island, any place, what you see is their life is like a circle. And every single one of those things I mentioned and everything else is all connected. That's why in so many sacred ceremonies, you find humor. Important thing, you know, but you don't find too much humor in most churches. Well, maybe sometimes I do, but if you laugh, they throw you out. Everything is connected. Everything really is sacred, but it's important to take a little time out of each and every day to acknowledge that sacredness, you know, because we get caught up in your job and you know, driving your car, whatever it is, and we forget that what we're doing is sacred and the fact that we are sacred. So one of the ceremonies, simple ceremonies that we do is every morning we rise with the sun. When we rise with the sun, we make a prayer. And we say, Grandfather, Son, as you are born this day, so too may I be born. And every day you start brand new. You start fresh. You're a new person. What you did yesterday and all the things that came before, I mean, it's important to remember, especially any mistakes you made, not to repeat them, but you don't have to blame yourself. You don't have to feel guilty. You don't have to, you know, hold yourself down and hit yourself over the head because of what you've done. That person is not there anymore. Because every night at sunset, we do the same thing. We burn some cedar, sage, and we offer a prayer and we say, Grandfather, Son, as you die this day, so too may those things within inside me that keep me from being whole, may those things die. And so every day you die and you're reborn. It's never too late to start. So tomorrow, today, you can start letting go of those things that are holding you back. My elder calls them cans of beans, you know? All those things that are weighing you down. You're carrying them around in your back like a knapsack full of rocks. You don't have to keep doing that. You can put them down anytime you decide. And you can do it today.
David, a very important concern of Yad Kodesh Native Center and many other indigenous peoples is the misuse and exploitation of Native spirituality. In my previous question about ceremony, I mentioned how prayer and spiritual practices in Native American cultures are undertaken with the utmost seriousness and sincerity. We also mentioned how traditional beliefs and ceremonies are practices which must be learned over many years, following very strict clan teachings one is taught from youth through adulthood. I agree with you that everyone should have more respect for Native spirituality and that one can appreciate and learn from different spirit paths. This is why, in a general context, I think non-Native people can benefit from the ethics, values, philosophies, knowledge, and wisdoms of indigenous peoples. In fact, if the so-called dominant Western society does not soon honor the earth and respect life in a sacred manner, the way in which indigenous peoples' traditional cultures are based upon, then I fear there will be many negative consequences from this insane industrial society that seems separate from spirit and which is destroying the planet. Nonetheless, there is a large problem with people misusing and even exploiting Native spirituality, often for profit and personal ego. One expression of this is often termed New Age. Some examples of concern are the selling of ceremonies, such as sweat lodges, vision quests, and ceremonial pipes. There are those Native and non-Native who appoint themselves as medicine people or spiritual leaders that have no authority to conduct ceremony. Many in the art world also collect sacred items, such as prayer bundles, that should not be used as decoration. As listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, the theft of sacred artifacts by anthropologists and archaeologists, often kept by both public and private museums, is a serious disrespect to Native people's spirituality, not to mention violation of NAGPRA, Native American Graves Protection Repatriation Act, or cultural historical preservation laws. I am sure there are many fine, good-intentioned people who are just trying to get reconnected to their spirit by doing what they think is Native ceremony. I've, in fact, met some nice folks who think they are honoring us Indian people by imitating traditional ceremonies. However, there is a very big difference from trying to learn from respected Native spiritual leaders when given permission to participate in ceremony than going out on your own and mimicking a Hollywood movie version of what is portrayed as ceremony. I am very concerned about the mixing of different tribal traditions, such as some New Agers do, with crystals, drums, rattles, and even some songs or dances that should only be performed by certain persons that have the knowledge and authority to do certain practices. Many indigenous ceremonies are only done for very specific reasons or for during a certain time of the year. In Europe, there are so-called Indian clubs, analogous to the Boy Scouts, where people dress up as Indians and spend weekends in a recreated Plains teepee camp. In the U.S., there was a growing Indian hobbyist movement, which concerns many Native peoples who feel our culture and spirituality is being played with. David, what are your thoughts about the issue of misusing and exploiting traditional Native ceremony?
That question is a large concern of mine also. It's a real difficult point trying to, number one, on one hand, share information that is sacred and that's been entrusted to me by my elders, and on the other hand, determining, is this going to be misused? Some things that I, for instance, myself, that I talk about are things that my elders have specifically instructed me to talk about, while there's other things that I do not have permission to talk about at all and do not talk about. That's one way. There's certain things, the things I try to share with people are things that are sort of broad-based things that everybody should know. These are things that at one time, for instance, in a Cherokee village, an herbalist, Chiritaki, would know 800 plants. But the average person walking around would know 100. And most herbalists in America today don't even know that many. So the average person had a much greater understanding of the world, not just plants, but in the ways of the world, the ways of doing things. It used to be, for instance, a plunging ceremony. The head of the household would do it for the family once a month. You know, he wasn't a medicine person or anything. That was a family ceremony. And there were many things like that that everybody knew. And so there's some things I think it's important that we share the information that is the sort of broad information that everybody should know, how to live in a sacred way and things like that. When it comes to the ceremonies, on the other hand, I get real disturbed when I see people, they read a book and you too can be a medicine man for fun and profit, or how to be a medicine man in 10 easy lessons. And there are books like that, believe me. That's a real problem, because you see it all the time. You see people charging for ceremonies, which in our tradition, I mean, I know traditionally there are some traditions that actually did charge for ceremonies, but in our tradition we never charge for ceremonies. It's, how can you charge for spirit? First of all, it's telling somebody they have to pay to pray. It's wrong. And spirit doesn't cost anything, and there's not enough money in the world either, you know, to pay for spirit. It's the most sacred gift we have. So it is a big concern, and there's more and more people. One of the problems is that you see a lot of people, they'll go around and they talk about Native American spirituality, but they separate it, and that's not traditional. If they're traditional, then they're also talking about politics, and they're also talking about culture, and they're also talking about lifestyle. They're talking about everything. Spirituality certainly is a part of that, and I think it's a good thing to, in a sacred way, share ceremonies with non-native people if that culture is, you know, open to that. Some cultures are not open to that at all, and other ones are very open to that. I think that's a good thing, because it helps to turn people's heads. It exposes them to spirit and allows spirit to change people in ways that I could never change people, or my elders couldn't change people, but spirit can do all sorts of amazing things. Especially you get somebody in a ceremony sometimes, if they come in a way of respect and they're sincerely interested. But I think at the same time, you have to be cautious in what you say, and you also have to emphasize, something I do all the time, emphasize the fact that just because somebody told you about it, just because you did it once, doesn't mean that you can now do it yourself. Sometimes I when I say it to people, I make it into a little bit of a joke, because people are more open to taking it if it's not like, you can't do this. Make it a joke. It's like when they have those TV shows where the guy jumps a motorcycle over a bus and says, kids, don't do this at home. And that's what I say to people. I said, look, you know, we're talking about these things because it's a good thing for you to have some understanding that there's a different way to live, that the way the culture tells you is the only way to live is not true. It's not the only way to live. There are better ways to live, certainly different, I think, better. But at the same time, you can't expect somebody who's brought up in a different culture. It takes years and years and years even to learn to understand the basic culture, let alone something as sacred and in part of the culture as a ceremony. So one of the things that I always do is if I meet someone, and it doesn't matter if they're full blood, half blood, or no blood, and they're doing ceremonies and leading ceremonies, there's questions I ask. And if they're offended that I ask questions, then right off the bat, I'm not interested in having anything to do with them, because you shouldn't take offense if somebody wants to know. I always ask people, I ask them who their elders are and what nation they're from. And, you know, I ask it in a friendly way, but I'd like to know. And I'd like to know where they learned these things and who gave them permission to do these things and how long they've been doing it. How long did they get trained in doing it? Do they charge money for it? These are all the kind of things that I think should be everyday questions. Anytime somebody's representing themselves, I mean, within a community, people know each other and they know who knows what and everything, but especially when you have people traveling out on the road, and there's a lot of people doing it, and I know a lot of people doing it, and I know people who do it in a good way, people who I respect very much. And then I know people who say, they, you know, you listen to them and it sounds good, but I've seen them drink a bottle of whiskey and then go in to do a ceremony, and that's not a sacred way of doing things. So I think it's really important. And also look, how does this person live? Do they talk? Do they say one thing, you know, when they're in front of a group of people, and then they do something else when they're by themselves, you know? Or do they live the way they talk? That's an important thing also. Nobody's going to be perfect. It's not like in certain traditions they have these perfect guru type guys that go around just to be perfect. Nobody's perfect, but consistent. Consistency is real nice. If you say one thing and you try to live up to that, sure, we make mistakes, and it's okay. And it's, you know, we all make mistakes, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we try not to. If you're consistently saying I do this, and then consistently behind your back you're doing something else, if you're telling everybody, oh, you should all be vegetarians, and then you keep going out to McDonald's for a burger, well, there's something wrong there. So, you know, it's the sort of thing where I've seen people say, oh, you should never drink alcohol, you know, it's bad for you, and then they go out and drink it. I mean, at least be honest about what it is. And you tend to get a feel about certain people, you know. There's some people, you just look at them, you go, well, they got all the right words, but there's something kind of missing there. And I think those are important things. And I think, as I said before, if you try to ask people, and I don't interrogate somebody, but just in a good way, ask somebody about why they're doing these things and for what reason. In our tradition, we have there's a real easy way of doing it. If somebody asks me to do something, I have a responsibility. And that responsibility first is to ask myself, why do I want to do it? Do I want to do it for me, for my ego, or do I want to do it to serve the whole? And if it's my ego, then I should have no business doing it at all. Okay, if I want it because it serves the whole, then it's a good thing. Then I ask myself the question, does it serve all my relations? It's not just my tribe or my community, but it's also all the people, black, red, yellow, white. And relations just doesn't stop there. It's the plants, the animals, the water, the fire, the air, the sun, the moon. All these things are my relations. Does it serve them all? And then does it serve for 7 generations? And I have to ask myself this each time. And it's we usually take 4 days to pray over that. I mean, you don't pray every single minute of the day, but you'd spend much time thinking about these things and asking yourself these questions. And by the end of 4 days, you've got a pretty good idea where your motivation is coming from. And so anytime you see something like that, and you look at somebody and say, well, who does it serve? Who does it serve? You know, sometimes we might not agree with everything, but you can see, I can give you an example. There's a person who, I guess people call him a medicine man. I don't know what he'd call himself. I don't really like that term either. He's very visible, very out there, working mostly with non-native people. Some of the things he does, I don't necessarily agree with. But when I look at what he's done over a period of years, I have to weigh it. I have to say, what has he accomplished? Has it been good or has it been bad? And when I look at that and I see that mostly what is accomplished has been positive, then I have to say, well, there are some things there I'm not real happy about, and maybe I can do something to encourage him to change those things. You know, on the other hand, if I attack him, I'm not going to get anywhere. But I can try to, you know, in a friendly way, encourage maybe some things that are not real good to change. But at the same time, if on the whole, what he's doing is good and it's serving all the relations, then even if I don't agree with it, then I have to respect that.
Oh, the father looks at me with ancient eyes, with all the knowledge of the ones who've gone before, and all the wisdom of a thousand years or more. Carefully, without words, well, I heard him say, is the breath of the earth, life of a tree, the flapping of the wings, it is the song the insects sing. Vibration in my fingertips. With each note I play, my sickness melts away, and I join the song of all creation. It is the breath of the earth, the life of a tree, flapping of the wings, it is the song the insects sing. It is the touch of Father's Son, it is the brush of the moon, it is all.
Listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitichi Native Center. Yat-Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal, culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat-Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their world views in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat-Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat-Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat-Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat-Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat-Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat-Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat-Kitichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat-Kitichi's Kinonwatakusi Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat-Kitichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat-Kitichi Native Center, write to Yat-Kitichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat-Kitichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin, to all of our relations.
Thank you. like stepping cactus to our land. To study their feathered freaks with funded money in their hands. Like a Sunday at the zoo, the cameras took away, taking notes of tape recordings of all the animals that play. Here comes the antelope that had to pass away. Here comes the antelope on another holiday. And the antelopes bring their friends to see the circus, watch the show. And when the pens are untried, they pack up the things and away they go. But there's nothing left to study, there's nothing left to see. Till the antelope keep on searching for the truth and for the key. Here comes the antelope, and had you passed away. Here comes the antelope on another holiday. Then back they go to write their book and tell the world there's more. But there's nothing left to write, it's all been done before. And on a sense of funded money that the antelope get to spend is ever given to their disappearing feathered friend. Here comes the antelope that had to pass away. Here comes the antelope on another holiday. And the antelope keep on digging our sacred ceremonial site. As if there was nothing wrong, his education gives them the right. But the more they keep on digging, the less they really see. Cause they got no respect for you or for me. Here comes the antelope that had to pass away. Here comes the antelope on another holiday.
Music from Native American singer-songwriter Floyd Westerman. His classic song entitled, Here Come the Anthros, a longtime favorite song of many of us, who are quite fed up with many anthropologists and archaeologists who have preyed upon indigenous peoples like mosquitoes. Prior to our Yad Kiddushi Native Center program identification, we featured the song, Breath of the Earth, from Jim Beer off his CD, Jim Beer in the River, a tribute to Hawk Littlejohn. The words of the song, Breath of the Earth, were written by Desalegue elder Hawk Littlejohn. I had the honor to meet Hawk many years ago when I attended an Indigenous Environmental Network gathering in the Kadua Mountains. Hawk was a very special person and was one of today's program's guests, David Winston's elder and teacher. Well, dear friends, we are nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio. I want to thank Chiritaki Dave Winston for sharing his thoughts today on honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. I also want to thank everyone for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio. As always, we invite listeners to send their email comments to us. Yat Kiddushi Native Center's email is yatkiddushi@earthlink.net. Once again, our email is yatkiddushi@earthlink.net. We encourage our worldwide listeners to visit our website to learn more about our projects. Yat Kiddushi Native Center's website is www.yatkiddushi.org. That is www.yatkiddushi.org. We shall conclude today's broadcast with a song from the drum Whitefish Bay. Off their Arbor Records CD, Whitefish Bay Singers, Nadu Timag. The song we will hear is a traditional jingle dress song. The jingle dress is very special in Indian country. A beautiful jingle dress has 365 cones or jingles, which sway with the woman dancer. A clan mother told me that each jingle represents a prayer for each day of the year. Thank you for listening. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, kinon wantakwasin to all of our relations.